The Exchange Daily Podcast is brought to you by
Doucette Survey, serving your professional land surveying and mapping needs in New England, now with offices in New Hampshire and Maine. Information at doucetsurvey.com. That's doucetsurvey.com.
And Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, equal housing opportunity.
Enjoy the show.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. You may have seen the highway electronic billboards already, warning that, as of July 1st, talking on a handheld cell phone while driving will be against the law. The ban passed in mid-2014 as New Hampshire followed more than a dozen other states with similar laws. But now, as local police and state troopers gear up to enforce the new statute, many questions remain. How vigorous an enforcement effort will we see, given limited police time and resources? How many Granite Staters will continue to chat behind the wheel, unwilling to give up the convenience they've become accustomed to? And here's the really big question. How much will this law really improve highway safety? Research on distracted driving is mixed, with some studies saying the danger isn't so much about fiddling with the device itself, but about so-called cognitive distraction, where the driver is focused on the phone conversation and not on the road. Today in The Exchange, New Hampshire's cell phone ban, what you need to know about the law itself and what the research suggests. Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We have two guests for the hour. Joining me in studio is Lieutenant Matt Shapiro. He's Special Services Commander for the New Hampshire State Police, Coordinator for Highway Safety, Dignitary Protection, and Public Relations. Lieutenant Shapiro, welcome back. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us from Boston, Brian Reamer, Research Scientist at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology's Age Lab and Associate Director of the New England University Transportation Center at MIT. And Brian Reamer, welcome back to you, too.
Thank you very much, Laura.
Well, Lieutenant Shapiro, I just want to turn to you first. What do you see out there as a state trooper on our roadways that make you think that this law is a good idea?
Well, let me start with the problem. The development of the problem. I started in law enforcement about 20 years ago. And when I first started, my first phone, I would consider a first-generation cell phone, came in a bag. It was about the size of a lunchbox. And there were very few cell towers, and there was less service. And there was really no problem with regard to cell phone distraction and driving at that time. And not only that, I wouldn't even consider using that phone while I was driving in about 1995. We moved on about 10 years later. We had what I would consider to be second-generation cell phone use. And that's where you started to see an issue of cognitive distraction becoming a problem, dialing the phone becoming a problem, and then really text messaging becoming a problem. And fast forward about 10 years after that, we got into 2012, 13, 14, and 15. And what you really have now is a third generation, which is a personal computer. And now you have issues with using the internet, GPS functions, doing email like I have on my phone right now on my belt.
Checking Facebook.
Yeah, and so the problem evolved in that way. So the legislative history of how how we got to where we're at today is in about 2009, 2010, the legislature worked on what was the texting law. And that was a good faith effort to deal with what was going on at the time. However, it was extremely difficult to enforce, and what it didn't deal with was the emerging technology that I referred to in the third generation of the cell phones. So it prohibited text messaging, and it prohibited using two hands from using an electronic device while you're driving. Well, a couple things happened. For one, the device has shrunk. So the device is so small now that I can't even put my two hands on it and two thumbs. You rarely ever saw somebody with their elbows up on a steering wheel manipulating a phone in that regard. So that provision wasn't working. And the second thing is texting was prohibited, but it specifically broke out that what was not prohibited is reading the phone or dialing the phone, and it didn't deal in any regard with the use of the internet, GPS, email, or any of the other emerging technologies. So this certainly isn't about writing tickets, but I think this will be a telling statistic.
Well, we've had some deaths from people looking at their phones, talking on the phone, doing whatever.
We've had, more than you know, a number of serious traffic crashes, fatal traffic crashes. Of course, a number of them have been high profile in the news. But in 2012, we took a look at what everybody perceived to be a problem. Whether this is the right solution or not, there will be some people that disagree. But everybody agreed there was a major problem with distracted driving and electronic devices. And the Department of Safety had approximately 100,000 stops during 2012, and 76 of them were for texting. That's a pretty good indicator that that law was not meeting the magnitude of the problem. So in 2013-14, what we currently have for the law today started out in the legislature as HB 1360. And initially that went to the House Transportation Committee, and they thoroughly vetted HB 1360, and they came out with a result that was 13-3 in favor of it. Went to the full House and passed the full House. Then it went to the Senate. The Senate Transportation Committee passed it 5-0, which is astonishing. It's hard to get anybody
support
to agree on anything, let alone to have that kind of support. And what they did is they added onto it an amendment, which was very thoughtful. I wish I would have thought of it myself, which is to have a year-long public education program to inform the public of the hazard and of the potential solution.
And that's why, because this law, people may be thinking, wait a minute, we heard about this a long time ago. That's why there's been this big public education ramp up. I guess what I'm curious about from you, Lieutenant Shapiro, just your personal experience, you're out there on the road, you're a state trooper. What sorts of driver behavior do you see right now that makes you go, oh boy, we need this law?
Well, I don't think you need to break me out as a state trooper. I would find it hard to believe that anyone would not see the same thing. Every driver knows that at every intersection, every stop sign, every intersection, as you have opposing traffic passing you on any local road, on the highways, as you slide by cars or they slide by you, you see all kinds of handheld manipulation of electronic devices. And I would say that at this point, coming to the end of the public education program, there are a number of groups who are very familiar with the hazard, starting with victims, pedestrians, motorcyclists, bicyclists, joggers, walkers, dog walkers, and even drivers. I think what you find in the research is that drivers generally agree that this is dangerous and it's a bad idea. Whether or not they change their own behavior is a different story. What they don't want is someone to come left of center and hit them.
All right, let me bring Brian into this, and then we have so much more to talk about, including all the research, and a dozen or so other states have these laws, so we'll find out what their experiences have been. I also have a lot of people who want to jump in on our conversation. The number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Let's hear from you. Your questions about New Hampshire's new law going into effect July 1st, your comments, your concerns. Do you think it's a good approach or not? And Brian Reamer, to you, again, you study this, given your work at the Transportation Center at MIT. Just to clarify, again, this is a handheld cell phone ban here in New Hampshire. Hands-free is still okay. And as Lieutenant Shapiro told us, texting while driving has been banned in New Hampshire and almost every state for some years now. So how much more dangerous is it, Brian, to talk handheld versus hands-free? What do we know?
Well, I think, as you said, Laura, you have to differentiate between talking and, in essence, device manipulation. Physical device manipulation in the vehicle is clearly a period of high risk, something that should be banned in many senses, and is not necessarily coherently clear that it will keep the eyes on the road in the way that many would like. But when we think about the conversational aspects of phones, one of the risks of a ban such as this is that people believe that hands-free communication is safer. When your hands are on the wheel and your eyes are on the road, the cognitive aspects of the phone conversation have been shown to be pretty much equally risky, whether it's hands-free or handheld.
Equally risky.
So one of the hard parts there becomes that as we promote hands-free, data suggests that people may talk longer. And the reason is you're no longer encumbered by the physical aspects of holding a phone. It's a cue. It's a reminder that I'm doing something. As much as we're talking here today, If I'm encumbered by holding a phone, I no longer have that physical reminder I'm doing something different. So if we talk longer, do we exacerbate the risks? A lot of unknowns.
What's the difference between talking on the phone, hands-free, to somebody, Brian, and talking to a person sitting next to you?
That's a good question. So there's actually a fairly clear difference. The difference in the person sitting next to you, if they're an adult, especially of driving age, is that they're contextually aware of the situation around them. That means the pace of the conversation ever so slightly dips as the ebbs and flows of the traffic demand go up and down. The light goes red, the conversation pauses at an noticeable level, just to allow you to focus on the driving scene for a fraction of a second and then come back to the conversation. On the other side of a phone, the person you're talking with is contextually unaware. They keep talking, the brain keeps listening, no matter what's happening around you. In many senses, quite similar to the aspects of children talking in the backseat of the vehicle without the emotional content that usually comes from a child yelling at you or communicating with you at some points in time.
What do you think, Lieutenant Shapiro? I looked at a bunch of studies yesterday, and more than one said what Brian is saying, that the cognitive distraction by that phone conversation, that's really the problem, not the device itself.
Well, that's the only thing that was said in the last couple of minutes I would disagree with, is that last statement you made. Otherwise, I agree 100% with Brian. We have no difference in opinion. In the public education program, we are not educating the public that hands-free is risk-free. There is no doubt that there is still an element of cognitive distraction that goes on, and that the higher the load or the more in-depth the conversation is, the higher the distraction. You can have very small and limited conversations like come home and pick me up, I need to be at work or whatever, and there's very little cognitive load. But if you get an argument with somebody or talking about a debate about work or whatnot, there's a high cognitive load and it's very distracting. It doesn't matter if it's hand-free or not. But what Brian also said, I agree with, which is those visual manual subtasks are extremely dangerous, and that is broken out from what we just talked about the cognitive load. When you have your head down for 5 seconds, 10 seconds, 15 seconds, 20 seconds to go through a strong password or type an email or to try and go into your contacts to search for your name and it's not there, now you got to go back and dial the number, but oops, you made a mistake, and you basically have been distracted for 25 minutes, and visually looking at a device that is 6 inches long and is in 8-point type, and you're using your fine motor skills to manipulate it, that is deadly.
So it's not just talking. It's the other stuff that people do, the Facebook, the email, and whatever, Lieutenant Shapiro. That's what you're saying.
What I'm saying is I agree with Brian about the fact that cognitive distraction still exists, but the visual manual portion is really what this law is getting after.
All right, let's go to a short break. And as we head into that, I want to share a couple of Facebook comments with you. Caroline says, it's about time. I moved from Connecticut to New Hampshire, drive on the highway every day. People are always on their phones, weaving all over. It's scary. We'll get some more Facebook comments in and hear from you after a short break. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. This hour in The Exchange, we're talking about New Hampshire's newest distracted driving law. As of July 1st, it'll be against the law to use a handheld cell phone while behind the wheel. We're revisiting this effort to curb driver inattention this hour in The Exchange. Also, how these laws have affected traffic safety elsewhere in the country, whether they've worked, what the research says. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. And gentlemen, we went into the break with a Facebook comment. I want to share a couple other from you. So we had Caroline saying it's about time. But then we have Anthony who says, I've lived in 7 states, driven across the country a dozen times. Every state, law or no law, is the same. Mark says Chapel Hill, North Carolina passed a similar law, but it was ruled unconstitutional or just illegal because it would affect businesses which relied on phones and cars, Uber and tow companies. Mark says, I wonder if this one will have the same fate or if it has enough classes and exceptions. I might ask both of you guys about that. But then here's a Facebook comment from James. He says, play with your radio and apply makeup all day long. Just don't tap that screen. Different logic. So here's a question for you first, Brian, I think, from James's comment. Is device use, whether it's talking, Facebook, email, whatever, is it necessarily more distracting than fiddling with the radio or applying makeup?
In many cases, the act of interacting with a device in a vehicle can be quite distracting, more so than the radio in general. But you know, makeup is a different category in many senses. The fact of the matter is that as we interact with devices, whether they're handheld or the technology in the vehicle, they do diverge our attention from the forward road. And eyes on the road is the only way that we as humans have to detect threats around us and react to situations imminently.
What did you think, Brian, about Lieutenant Shapiro's point just before the break that it isn't just talking, the cognitive distraction of having a phone conversation, hands-free or not, but just all the other stuff that people do on their smartphones?
Yeah, I think we really need to talk about the two pieces of the conversational aspects of the phone and the physical aspects of the phone separately. I 100% agree with Lieutenant Shapiro about the act of interacting with the technology is a risk. It's a clear risk that needs to be moved out of the vehicle in general, although we see many situations where the technologies are being integrated into the vehicle cab, being integrated through voice interaction, and a fact that I've studied extensively here, it alleviates some of the demands, but not all the demands. We need to think more functionally about what is appropriate to do in the vehicle. And I think fundamentally there really is no need for Facebook in the car. Why? Our job at any point in time while I'm sitting behind the wheel is from getting from point A to point B safely. You know, is Facebook really involved in that in any way, shape, or form? And the answer is pretty clearly no. The radio, some form of entertainment, maybe central to keeping us awake at some point in time. The driving task is relatively mundane at many points in the day. We can make some arguments that the communication through verbal aspects of the phone, talking to an individual, may not have excessive risk associated with it, although there is clearly risk at certain points in time. Talking on the phone while you're driving around downtown Concord is probably not in your best interest. Driving in northern New Hampshire on Route 93 in the middle of the night, probably the best safety technology you can pick up. So very context dependent.
Well, here's an email from Franny in Concord that just came in to that point. She says, I often make 2 or 3 hour drives at night, and I find that the best way to ward off sleepiness is to call a friend and chat while I drive. Franny says, texting and driving is always a bad idea, but I think in some situations, talking on the phone and driving is safer than not. What do you think, Lieutenant Shapiro?
I'm not going to argue with that point either. I would just say that I think it was the intent of the legislature not to stifle communication. The point was to make communication safer and still allow communication for business and personal use. And this is the best thing they could come up with to meet both of those needs. I did make a note on one other point that I think one of your callers would be interested in, or one of the questions that came in, which is impeded driving. That comes up a lot. Why isn't there something with regard to dogs in people's laps and people eating sandwiches and having a cup of coffee or putting on makeup?
Putting mascara, right.
And I could tell you the legislative history of that, too, was that impeded driving was part of this bill when it started, and it was broken out of the bill. And I understand the reason why. The reason why basically was that it was very difficult to define what is illegal. Is it too distracting to have to be eating a breadstick as opposed to a 12-inch sandwich? If a German Shepherd's on your lap, that's a problem. But what if it's, you know,
a little teeny puppy?
A tiny puppy, you know. And that was basically the argument, is that it was very difficult to define.
Wow.
And that's how it wound up being broken out of the law.
Well, joining us now on the phone is someone who's very familiar with the workings of this law and the shaping of it. Carol Crawford is with us, state representative from the Lakes region. She's also a driving school instructor and on the Transportation Committee was a supporter of this handheld cell phone use while driving ban. Carol Crawford, thank you for being with us.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure.
Well, you're a supporter of this law, as I said. What was the main reason that drove you to back this?
Well, safety, I think, was the main reason. And basically, driving with 16 and 17-year-olds day in and day out, I mean, I can see distraction just driving with them. My main point was targeted towards the 16 and 17-year-olds, and I did speak on the floor about that. So that was my main concern. Not that I'm not concerned with adults driving on the road, because I see it every day. Lieutenant Shapiro is correct. I see it every day, cars going over the center line because people are distracted by their phones.
What are you hearing from your constituents about this, Representative Crawford? Coming on July 1st, all of a sudden, here it is.
there it is. And I think it was a well-written bill. It was a bipartisan, bill. I mean, when we have 13-3 in transportation, you had many Republicans and Democrats voting for that bill. I think it's a good bill and sound bill. And will it need tweaking? Maybe it will in the future. But I think right now law enforcement is on board. We're teaching it in driver's ed every day. We have all the information for the kids. They know what's expected and not expected of them. So I think it's going to be a great bill, and I think it will be successful, and I think we'll see the numbers go down as far as distracted driving goes.
What's the age gap on this issue, Representative Crawford?
The age gap?
Yeah. Do younger people feel differently about it from older people? I have read that some younger people have said, no way, not putting the phone away.
Well, you know, of course, the kids in my classes are gung-ho about it. I don't know if that's to please me, but they're certainly on board as far as I know, and they know that the fine is stiff. $100 is a lot of money. So I'm hoping that, you know, I think it will take a little more education as far as that goes, but I think when maybe someone is stopped and fined for that, one of their friends, it might click. But I think the young kids are going to be better about it than the adults.
Lieutenant Shapiro, did you want to jump in real quick there?
Yes, I agree with that. Of the questions that I've had, usually younger people are more adaptive to technology, and this is not a big deal for a lot of them already. A lot of them already use hands-free technology.
Right.
And also I would agree with Representative Crawford that it was a well-crafted bill. And I would add, as evidence of that, that during HB 426 in 2014-2015, which was a repeal attempt, the House was controlled by a different party. And when it went back to transportation again with an attempt to repeal, the result was literally exactly the same. It was 13-3 in favor of ITL. The same.
Solid support for this. So, okay.
Going through a second round.
Well, a couple more questions for you, Representative Crawford. Supporters have said, you know, as we just heard, people can switch to hands-free, but that does incur a cost in time and money. Some people really don't want to invest that time and money. I'm thinking about myself, and, you know, I just don't really want to bother doing that. I'm busy. What's your message for people who just, you know, are you kidding me? Like, one more thing I have to think about and install and pay for.
Yeah, but you know what? Safety certainly is the bottom line here. And I know you can pick up those Bluetooth devices to even put into your vehicle, $15 at Radio Shack or something like that. I don't think that's asking a lot. I think people should be able to adapt to that quite easily.
I wanted to ask you about another question. We talked about this earlier with our researcher from MIT, Brian Reamer, who said that, you know, some of the studies indicate that it isn't so much fiddling around with a device. It's more that you're just cognitively distracted while you're talking on the phone to somebody, hands-free or not, and that these laws don't make a huge difference. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I'm not the scientist. Listening to testimony in committee, I think we weighed all of those aspects, and I think, you know, what we came up with is something that I think is going to work.
Representative Crawford, hold on. Yeah, Brian Reamer, I can hear you wanting to jump in. Go ahead.
Yeah, but I think we're muddling the water here. The difference between the hands-free communication, talking on the phone, and the hands-free use of devices for what would once be the typing aspect are different. You can't blend the two together. You know, fundamentally, we'd like to. It's easier to. But taking away the physical manipulation of the phone is really important. Taking away the conversational aspects of phone use and perhaps the aspect of holding the phone to the ear, while legislatively and enforcement-wise it has Claire's advantage, may not be in our best interest. It's a very – that's a very, very different and very difficult aspects. The fact that we don't want people typing into devices in the car, we don't want them engaged in Facebook in the car, is clear, trivial, simple, but still an enforcement issue. The act of conversations, on the other hand, is a much more complex piece.
I see, Brian.
Can't be brought together.
Okay, so two different animals, really, that we're talking about here. Everybody's kind of agreeing, you know, Facebook, email, texting, whatever. No. But you're saying, Brian, the conversational stuff is different, that actually it might be better to physically be holding a phone because it reminds you that, yeah, you're on the phone. Is that what you're saying, Brian?
Exactly. And the aspect of is we talk along. We're social-emotional creatures by nature. If we don't have a reminder, we just keep talking. And that act of holding the phone may actually shorten the conversation. The risk models are no different.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead, Representative Crawford. Yeah.
One thing. When we're teaching 16 and 17-year-olds, we teach two hands on the wheel all the time. So when you're holding a phone to your ear, obviously you're only driving with one hand.
I understand what the talk is coming from. I'm talking about the realities of how we see people driving. And I also will charge forward here. We also, from a legislative perspective, need to look and think about the future. And the future is actually in many vehicles here today and will be growing in characteristic over the coming years. The influx of automation technology in the vehicle is going to be radically shifting the operational characteristics of the car, where instead of having two hands on the wheel, you may only have a finger or even nothing on the wheel for extended periods of time.
Self-driving cars.
Not self-driving cars, highly automated vehicles. So not that they're driving themselves. That's not happening for quite a while.
Right.
But all the way from the point you cross over the New Hampshire line in southern New Hampshire to the Canadian border, you really may not need to touch that wheel. And the act of phone use, physical or any or the like, may actually be the only thing that will keep us awake. So we're going to have to really watch the technology development in the vehicle and laws such as have been created recently in New Hampshire and look at the convergence of these two features together. There is some really difficult policy decisions that are going to have to be made around technology changes in the vehicle.
All right, well,
that are here today.
Representative Crawford, lots for you to keep an eye on the Transportation
Absolutely.
Committee. Thank you for being with us. We really appreciate
You're
it.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
That's Carol Crawford. She's a state representative from the Lakes Region, also a driving school instructor and a member of the House Transportation Committee. One more time, you can join us with your questions and comments about New Hampshire's soon-to-be-enforced ban on the use of handheld cell phones while driving. Again, this is coming up July 1st, so if you've got questions, comments, concerns, now's the time. 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook. Find us on Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Lieutenant Shapiro, I can see you want to jump in. Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to add 2 points on what was said by Representative Crawford and Brian in combination. And one was, I'm sure Brian would agree, that although there may be some benefits to talking on the phone, that depends on the amount of cognitive load that is going on. I have no doubt that he would agree with that. So I would just make that point. A second point I would make is Representative Crawford talked about having two hands on the wheel and holding a cell phone is a problem in itself. But even more troubling than that to me, actually vastly more troubling than that to me, is the fact that you don't get the phone to your ear without manually manipulating it. So you can see if texting is universally dangerous and just about everybody agrees with it, you ask me, are you going to be on time this morning to be in the studio? And I type YES and hit send. And that's the most dangerous thing anybody can practically do. Everyone agrees. Texting is terrible, right? But in order to get that phone to my ear to make a handheld telephone call, I have to go through a strong password. And sometimes you may have a password that is 13 characters long with numbers and symbols and so forth. Then I have to go into my contacts, and I'm searching for you, and I don't find you. Then I have to go into my keypad, and I have to manipulate it. And wait a second, I made a mistake because I'm not looking at the road, and I had to switch my attention and go back and do it again. That is the bigger problem with holding the phone to your ear. It's how did it get to your ear to begin with? It's vastly more dangerous than texting YES send.
I have a question for you about enforcement, Lieutenant Shapiro and Brian. I want to bring you into this, too. How hard is it going to be for you guys to enforce this thing? I mean, how are you going to sort of peer into people's windows while you're driving down the highway to see if they're on their phones or not? I mean, that sounds dangerous, too.
Well, I don't think enforcement will be difficult. I hope there isn't much to be had. Just like sobriety checkpoints, we show up hoping we don't arrest anybody. So I hope the public education program will be effective and there won't be much to see. But I think it will be fairly simple. And I would just point back to my earlier comment about what every driver sees. If every driver sees this going on at every intersection, every stop sign, every traffic light, multiple cars that slide by them or they slide by that vehicle on the interstate, how difficult would it be for you to enforce? Probably not very difficult. And the reason why is because with the new law, it says you should not be manipulating a handheld device in any regard. You can't read on it. You can't compose anything. You can't view it. You can't post electronic messages. You can't initiate, receive, or conduct a conversation. You can't access the internet. You can't input information into a GPS system. And also, you can't manually type in any other portable electronic device. So even though you could use a dash-mounted GPS system, you can't. You can listen to it, you can glance at it, but you can't type in the address of the studio here that you want to travel to while you're driving. No, I don't think anybody thinks that's a good idea.
Let's go to the phones, gentlemen, and then a couple more emails, too, that I want to share with you. And Judith's calling in from Laconia. Hi, Judith. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
Yeah, hi. Well, I'm glad this is a great first step. I've also read studies that say that people that are using even the not hands-free communicating, you have the device in your phone where you can talk and your hands are free, that the number of accidents are almost equal to that of people that are holding their phones. Because you're not concentrating. There, people are driving for miles and in this conversation with someone in California, and they're causing terrible accidents. And so I think it's a great first step, but I think the accident rate of people using telephones and texting and all that now is exceeding that of DWI. And I think people ought to know that there are people right now in New Hampshire who are sitting in jail who have been using these devices and have killed someone. If you do it, you're going to go to prison. And so I just congratulate everybody for this great first step. I just don't think it goes far enough. I don't think we should be talking on the phone or using handheld or not handheld devices. I mean, get off the phone, get off the road, and do your communicating and save lives.
Well, Judith, thank you for the call. And I think, Brian, after a short break, I would like to ask you about that research. I have heard some people say, hey, it's worse than drunk driving, or it's just as dangerous as drunk driving, or along those lines. So I'll ask you to pick up on that after a short break. We will take more of your questions and comments in just a moment. You can call us like Judith did, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Coming up after the break, more of your comments, bunch of emails, and again, Brian, your thoughts on weather. Talking, using a phone while driving is indeed as dangerous as drunk driving. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. We're talking about laws designed to keep drivers paying attention on the road. New Hampshire's new ban on handheld cell phone use while driving goes into effect July 1st. We're finding out more. You can join us, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Brian Reamer is with us. He's a research scientist at MIT and the New England University Transportation Center there. Along with Lieutenant Matt Shapiro, he's with the New Hampshire State Police. And Brian, just before the break, we had Judith calling in saying she likes this new law. She said that driving while using some sort of device is just as dangerous as drunk driving. I hear that statistic thrown around a lot. Is it true?
No, I think that's a very, very, very poor comparison. Drunk driving is a much deeper, much more ingrained issue, much higher risk in many senses, not to parlay that technology use in vehicle is not a high risk. They really cannot be compared together. In the case of drunk driving, you are dealing with an individual who is incapacitated before they enter the vehicle, incapacitated throughout the experience or operational aspects of the vehicle. In the terms of technology use, you're talking about an individual who is potentially at high risk during certain aspects of the drive. They really can't be compared together.
Did you want to quickly comment on there, Lieutenant Shapiro?
I do. I don't disagree with that either. I would say both from data in New Hampshire and anecdotally, you see that most serious and fatal traffic crashes are caused by far related to DUI and more DUID, driving under the influence of drugs. But the top three reasons still remain: DUI and DUID, speed, and distraction. What I would say is it's approaching the level of the magnitude of the problem of DUI.
Okay. Thank you again for the question, Judith. Let's go to Hooksett next. David's on the line. Hi, David.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine. Go ahead.
I guess one of my questions would be, once this law is implemented, the people to stay legal are going to be pulling off everywhere on the side of the road to stay legal. That's, I think, is going to be a big issue with vehicles all over the sides of the road.
I wondered about that too, David. Thank you very much. Maybe to you first, Brian, does that create a safety hazard, people pulling over to make phone calls and then pulling back into traffic?
It absolutely does, but it's a measure of risk that has to be weighed with the broad aspect of risk while using the phone while underway. There is no golden nugget of zero risk that we can really, achieve. But the risk of pulling off to the side of the road in a safe location, obviously we do always see in cases that highlight in our minds of the unsafe locations. And a safe location is probably a lower risk than making that call or entering that information while we're driving down the highway.
Okay. Did you want to jump in too, Lieutenant Shapiro? I was wondering about this too. If people are pulling all over I-93 to make calls and then jumping back into traffic, is that dangerous?
Yes, but I think I would answer that in two ways. First of all, I think you'll see a migration towards hands-free devices. You could have a vehicle that's integrated to begin with. That's one way. That's not for everybody. I don't have vehicles that are integrated. You could have a speaker box, which you might be able to get for like $80. The state police issues Roadster 2 Bluetooth speaker boxes for any cruiser that doesn't have Bluetooth. You could use an over-the-ear piece, which I think one of your previous callers said you could pick up on maybe Amazon for $10 or $20. Or you can even just have a cradle and use a smartphone like I have with my Android device. I use Google. Okay, Google, it comes up. It's audio. Call Laura. It dials it by itself. I don't have to touch the phone in any regard. So what I think you will see is, for the convenience, people will migrate to hand-free. But that being said, there's no doubt the place that you choose to pull over makes a difference. You would want to pull over off an exit ramp or the widest portion of a road or in a parking lot and so forth.
Not just over on the side. Yeah. Well, thank you very much for the question, David. It's one I had as well. So here's an email from Lee who says, I was lost while driving last weekend and checking my phone's GPS. I have been very careful about not using the phone while driving and was stopped at an intersection to see where I was. For the split second it took me to look down, a mother and daughter stepped into the crosswalk. If they had not been paying attention, I would have hit them as I turned right. Lee says, needless to say, I will never use my phone while driving again and plan to invest in a GPS for my car. Lee, thank you for that. Real quick, Lieutenant Shapiro.
This is a great question, a great point, because it came up regularly as a point of consternation for drivers. Why can't I do this in an intersection? Why can't I do it at a stop sign? What is the problem? Well, I guess if you're on a country road and it's 10 o'clock at night and nobody's around, there might be less of a problem. But if you are on South Willow Street in Manchester at noon on a Friday, or Concord at noon on a Friday, and you're doing this, first of all, you're holding up 6, 7, 8 cars from making it through that light. And if anybody honks their horn behind you and you become startled, your natural reaction is to look up and drive. You don't see the bicycle that now pulled in front of you, or the car that switched lane, or the pedestrian, and so forth.
Here's another email. This one comes from David in Barnstead. I'll throw this to you, Brian. David says, could the advocates of these laws explain why traffic deaths are down since cell phone use began? Looking at the statistics, it might be assumed that we should encourage cell phone use. As the rate of use has gone up, the rate of deaths has gone down. David says, most of the dangerous behavior I see on the road is related to people trying to hide their devices in their laps. It seems to me that the way to make them safer is to require that the device be securely mounted to the car at eye level when in motion, the same way that the radio is. So he's got kind of two points there. Thank you, David, for the email. What about the statistics that he cites, Brian? Have you seen that?
So, first of all, there's a lot of complexity here that we do need to remember, that overall the act of conversing on a phone may actually be protective at the societal level. And that is a fact that is probably driven by the counteracting of fatigue in the vehicle, where fatigue being one of the larger risks at certain times. So that might have a role as well. On top of that, vehicle safety has improved both from the active and passive perspective over the last 10 to 15 years. That cannot be ignored. The vehicle we drive today is far safer than the vehicle we all owned 10, 15 years ago. So the concept of the phone in the lap is one that worries me greatly. As a cyclist by nature, I drove in this morning, was on a bike over the weekend. The amount of phone use on the lap is extraordinarily high and extraordinarily more difficult to enforce. I do think that law enforcement has to view that as a major issue in the enforcement of a hands-free law such as that has been issued in New Hampshire.
I see. So as not to get in trouble, Brian, people will just put the phone in the lap and sneak peeks down at it so that the officer driving by can't see.
Correct.
And that's kind of scary. You're looking down, right?
Yeah, and that's far higher of a risk than mounting up and fronting him.
I'm sure you've... go ahead.
Legislating mounting a phone in a vehicle is a giant leap.
Lieutenant Shapiro, I'm sure you talked about this in the long debates over this law.
Absolutely. And it's a good question. The problem with the premise of the question is distracted driving crashes have gone up. Although overall crashes have gone down and overall fatalities have gone down, and in 2011, 2014, we had two record years, the lowest in a half century. But as Brian said, it's more complex than that.
Because cars have gotten safer, airbags and so forth.
Well, for one, vehicles themselves are safer. Seatbelt use is way up. You have highway safety enforcement. You have highway safety messaging. You have electronic message boards. You have a great improvement in medical technology and transportation. Anywhere in New Hampshire can be reached now by helicopter transporting a serious victim, to the nearest hospital. And you have a tremendous effort by New Hampshire DOT, I would say probably all DOTs, but I'm familiar with New Hampshire, for countermeasures. In the last 10 years, you see centerline rumble strips on two-way roads with high posted speed limits.
Those have
you
made a
see
big difference.
Roundabouts.
Yeah.
You see barrier protection like right down through the center of Concord on 93 that didn't exist before that protects you from crossover accidents. All of these things play in affecting the overall rate of crash, and that's why we continue to push the rate down.
So that we can't necessarily pull those two phenomena together.
No, I would
cell phone use and the lower amount of traffic accidents.
Yeah, I would look at the cause for the crashes that remain. Even if there was 10 crashes, fatal crashes that remain, what are the causes? The causes will be the following: impaired driving, distracted driving, and speed.
What about his point, though, David's point, our emailer, and also what Brian said, Lieutenant Shapiro, that, people will throw their phones in their lap so that you guys won't catch them. That sounds even more dangerous.
Well, I don't disagree with that because, like Brian said, I think he's talking in the present tense and not the future. It's already happening. So the law that we're talking about that goes into effect July 1 has no bearing on that. It's already happening all over the place because people don't want to be caught for what they perceive as texting to begin with.
So your future that you're hoping for is more use of hands-free, that everybody's going to migrate to this and say, oh, okay, now it's against the law, so I guess I'll go there.
I guess that question relates to, do I think that this can be successful? And if so, how does it become successful? And one way, there's really three things that, to me, will calculate whether or not the law can be successful. One is the public aware of the hazard, and we already talked about that, and I think all these different groups are aware of the hazard. Two is the public aware of the law, and we spent the last year talking about the law. I was speaking at a highway safety conference about a month ago, and I asked, who here has seen the electronic message boards with a date specific for the start of this law? And I would say out of 200 people, about 5 people didn't raise their hand. So I think the public is well aware of the law, and I could talk all about the public education program and the players who are involved in what has been done. And the third thing is, and this is a big one, is there high visibility enforcement? The law itself will not work if the public doesn't understand the hazard, two, if they don't understand the law, and three, if there's not some reasonable chance of penalty. So that's incumbent upon law enforcement to enforce the law, to abide by it, in all safety services themselves, to be the tip of the spear, leading from the front, and then to enforce the law. And with those three things, I think that could make the law and its program successful.
Brian, looking at the laws across the 50 states, there's a wide range of laws surrounding the use of devices while driving. And as I said, about anywhere from 12 to 15 states have what New Hampshire's doing, a total ban on handheld device use while driving. What does Massachusetts do?
Massachusetts has no hands-free law. The texting ban is, in fact, in effect in Massachusetts. But there is a wide variety of enforcement. And I think one of the things that makes enforcement incredibly difficult here is that the act of hands-free use of technology, and this is some of the research that we've shown here, really doesn't eliminate the visual demands in the way one would like. We do look at the technology as we talk to it. And that visual attention that we allocate, the glances that we provide and look at the phone or the vehicle interface, had the same signature looking outside the vehicle as the glances to a phone we're holding. And it makes the enforcement aspect incredibly difficult. Now, one thing that we do understand from the deep bowels of the research here is that the glances in nature and the allocation of attention that occurs during hands-free use
is fundamentally different than the allocation of attention that occurs during physical use of the phone. The risk models, though, are not something that's easily to determine today.
Well, here's an email from Roger who says, as a motorcyclist, I can only wonder why it took so long to get a hands-free law passed. Detection of violators may present a challenge, but ask any motorcyclist who observes the driving of others as if his life depended on it, as it surely does, and they'll tell you that it's easy to detect these dangers. Drivers who drive erratically, shifting lanes suddenly, drifting, driving at irregular speeds, only half aware of the flow of traffic. So there's the motorcyclist's perspective. Here's an email from David who says, there's research, which I can't figure out right now. The worst cognitive impairment is visual. Our brains, David says, can only process one visual stream at a time. Whether the data comes through the eye or is generated in our mind's eye, David says, if talking on the phone while driving involves imaging or picturing something, those images or pictures replace the scene in front of the driver's eyes. Now, Brian, what do you think about that? You've kind of touched on that this hour, but I'd love your thoughts there.
So, yeah, we're looking at technology in the car, whether we're physically holding it, manipulating it, or we're talking to it. There's risks involved. We don't understand the risks entirely. We do understand that physical use of a phone with your fingers is inherently a risky activity. How risky talking to a technology in the car is, we don't know yet.
Here's another email from Bob who says, by the way, great show. Thanks for this discussion. You're welcome, Bob. He says, I was recently driving on I-87 in upstate New York. Noticed the state has rebranded rest areas and way station stops as text stops. They have also posted intermittent signs indicating the distance to the next text stop. This was very interesting and seemed a good strategy, but there are very few places on New Hampshire interstates where that could be rebranded. Bob, really interesting. What do you think, Lieutenant Shapiro? Not just a rest stop, but a text stop.
I agree with him. I don't think we have the infrastructure for it. We don't have the rest stops available. They're too far apart, and quite frankly, I'm not sure that we have the funding to engage in that. So it's a problem, but it is what it is.
Well, a couple rest stops were closed, actually, 4 or 5 years ago and have yet to reopen. I drive by one every time I drive to Keene. So no text stops in New Hampshire anytime soon, sounds like.
That would be my guess.
Here's another email from Sandra in Manchester. She says, I heard your intro in which you acknowledge that many people don't want to give up the convenience of using their cell phones while driving. And I certainly see evidence of that on the road. Sandra says, when was it that we stopped thinking that when behind the wheel, what we are doing is driving, not running a mobile office? Our focus should be on the driving, Sandra says. Lives are at stake. This is a big psychological shift, isn't it, Brian? Just the sort of idea that driving isn't just driving.
Yeah, and I think the act of driving 50, 75 years ago was a physical activity that took much of our attention. I mean, the wheel was difficult to turn. The car wasn't as quiet, convenient, comfortable as it is today. We, in many ways, have reduced the operational demands of the operational characteristics of driving significantly as vehicle engineering has advanced. So it allows for spare attentional capacity to do things, and we as humans need to do things to stay alert and awake. The question is, what is appropriate to do and what is inappropriate to do? And that's where the debate here is today.
And here's one last really just technical question for you, Lieutenant Shapiro, but we've been wondering about it. So if you pulled me over and you said, hey, Laura, I can see you're looking on Facebook while you're driving. That's against the law now. And I said, no, 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 I wasn't doing that. Could you subpoena my phone to look at the records as to what the exact moment of me being on Facebook was?
No, I think there's
we had a dispute there.
Yeah, I think the Fourth Amendment protects against illegal search and seizure. It's a constitutional amendment, and I don't think there's anybody, including me, who's interested in doing that. What I laid out that you can and can't do, really, there's no need to do that. You don't need to see the phone. You don't need to see physical evidence of this. In a lot of ways, it's not any different than any other traffic citation. You wind up speaking to a person, finding out their side. If it can't be resolved, the traffic ticket might be issued. If they disagree, you have the opportunity to wind up having a hearing on that and having a judge decide.
Okay, just the way it would be with any traffic dispute. July 1st, coming up, Lieutenant Shapiro, you're going to be busy.
I'm already busy. I'll be busier.
Okay. Thank you very much for coming in and filling us in on this. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That's Lieutenant Matt Shapiro. Again, he's with New Hampshire State Police, where he's a special services commander, also coordinator for highway safety, dignitary protection, and public relations. Brian Reamer, it was great to talk to you. Thank you very much for giving us your time.
Great time to talk this morning.
Brian Reamer, research scientist at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology Age Lab and associate director of the New England University Transportation Center at MIT. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. The senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Faith Meixel and Jason Moon. Our intern is Christina Phillips. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Kanoy.